keep talking about diversity, let's make it actionable. Today, an interview with Jeffrey Bowman to talk about ways to make a framework for transforming your business around culture. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. I've been publishing numbers related to the diversity of IT services companies' leadership teams for three previous quarters. And here we are, the fourth quarter I've looked at them, and they're still not good. They're roughly the same they have been the entire time. My data is backed up by diversity in tech data released in May. Two-thirds, 65% of women and non-white tech workers say they have experienced a form of bias in the workplace. 45% of tech workers say they've seen an increased focus on diversity and inclusion within their teams in the last year, but 55% believe their employers could be doing more. Women and non-white workers see less room for career advancement in technology, according to the .tech survey, while 22% of white males do not believe they have the same advancement opportunities as colleagues at the same level. The number increases to 32% for women and 38% for workers from underrepresented racial groups. So then, rather than do a long readout of data that isn't changing, this quarter, let's talk to an expert. I interviewed Jeffrey Bowman. Let's talk about a framework for change. I'm talking today with Jeffrey Bowman. Jeff, you want to give me a little bit about your background? You tell the story rather than have me do it.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, Dave, thanks for having me and on your platform and your audience members. So I am today co-founder and CEO of Reframe. And Reframe helps organizations build more inclusive customer and employee experiences. I started my career pretty much on the brand side. And what I mean by that, Pepsi, P&G, Miller, Whirlpool, Dell, and Sears. And that was over the course of about 20 years. And then made the transition to Ogilvy. Along the way, if you think about the 90s in itself, there was this little invention called the internet that became somewhat popular. And so at the time I was working, a lot of organizations were trying to figure out how to take advantage or how to modernize their organizations. And as I rose through the ranks at a lot of these big, large multinational companies, one thing that they were doing was talking about the pipes, but not enough attention was being addressed as it relates to the changing demographics within the US. Me being a Gen X, or Gen 3 post-civil rights, one of the things that seemed very extraordinary is that a lot of the companies we were working with, or I was working for, were not talking about this at a time when you were the eclipse of 2000s and obviously 2010 with the election of President Obama. And so it became more increasingly aware that companies were not really addressing what was happening from a macro standpoint. And so by the time I got into Ogilvy, and keep in mind, I worked across these different companies, helping them with their marketing and go-to-market approach and building the brand. At Ogilvy, we was working with a company called Ogilvy Consulting. So now all the agencies, for the most part, has a transformation and consulting unit. Ogilvy is very one of the first. I was helping companies transform from traditional marcom to digital. And then once again, the use case or the data point was that companies were not paying attention to this macro event. And so we started this organization called Ogilvy Culture. It was the first of its kind that helped companies accelerate growth and address the needs of the changing demographics within the US as well as globally.
I think, you know, for me, this is one of those areas where I'm learning a new language of talking about this. Like I think a lot of my listeners are, and a lot of people are, and I'm learning that different people are at different places on their journey. How do these conversations kind of normally start with somebody that's waking up saying, you know what, I need to think about this area of culture, of diversity, of the way that I've run my teams How does that initially start when they go from this realization of, hey, I need to do something? Because they're probably highly confused. How do you walk them through the initial bits of where you start?
Yeah, no, it's the interesting part is that a lot of what we do and what we talk about, it's almost like marketing 101. It becomes foreign because the people that you're now talking to are black and brown.
Right.
And that's really the unconscious piece, right? So wait a minute. The world is changing. Yeah.
Right.
As the world went from data punch cards to transmissions over wire to digital bits and bytes of supercomputers and clouds, people made that change, right? And continue to make that change. But for some reason, when it talks about the people coming into my stores, my retail, or visiting me through online e-commerce channels, it's just really hard for me to configure and get a grasp around it. So it's the people that you really have to focus on, or the audience, or the users, all the buzzwords that we use, they're different than how typically your base business was built on. And so that's typically the opening point that we begin to talk about and have the conversation. And then the second piece, well, wait a minute, how do I capture my fair share on this new demographic? And they're not really a new demographic, they've just grown. Right. And the way that you typically would do that is through multicultural marketing or DE&I. And typically that's when things get really confusing, because when you think about those practices, they were introduced to drive integration. So how do I integrate what I'm currently doing and address these needs? How do I integrate these people into my organization so that they stay? So that's the second piece. And oftentimes that's confusing because those practices were built or designed at a time when, you know, America was very monocultural. Whites were, you know, more than 80% of the U.S. population, whereas now it's about 60-ish and decreasing. And so when you think about now, well, how do I change? What do I need to change? First of all, let's start there. Once I figure out what do I need to change, where's that gap? Meaning if I have, you know, an environment built for folks that were not coming to my store, how do I get them to come to my store or my retail or whatever the case, or buy my product or service? What are those gaps? And then what do I need to do to close those gaps? And then once you do that, then it's just testing, learning, having conversations, focus groups, surveys, etc., that ultimately gets you to the right space that you need to be in, to where your product or service addresses those needs and you're getting your fair share, if not more.
So my initial answer is, well, yeah, that sounds totally easy. But this is the one area where, like, the danger feels a lot bigger. Right. So, and I'll speak to my own experience in this. So I'm obviously a white guy, right? A perceived misstep here feels like it can be a whole lot more devastating than my traditional marketing snafu, right? Like if I screw up the things that I'm comfortable with, like I make a bad marketing campaign and it misperforms or something along those lines, I don't run afoul of like, you know, of cultural issues that feel really scary. But if I screw up here, I can really, you know, it has a backlash. It has a danger that's really different. How do you get people to wrestle with that and get comfortable with it or not?
Yeah, no, look, what's more scary? You have a competitor in your space, has the mousetrap, has a value prop that addresses the needs of more people. And then within, you know, 5, 7, 10 years, you go out of business. Right?
Okay.
Kapoosh. Right. That's your investment. That's your retirement. Investors that have invested in your business, they're gone. That's number one. Number two, you know, the thing that I think becomes plausible is the idea of fear, of doing nothing. And that can be okay, but at the end of the day, you know, you want your products and your services to be a reflection of who you are. And so who you are as a company, you know, if you employ people that look, think, act, and you have a diverse organization, then how can you not address the needs of the people that reflect your organization? And the third piece, the scary piece, sometimes people say, well, that's probably because you haven't done your research. You haven't made the investment. Some of the largest companies that you can imagine don't have data, or don't have, or they have the data, but they don't have a diverse team to understand and dissect the data. And so they do nothing and they just continue to focus on their core business. And so I think that becomes a challenge for you as a business owner, as you talk about growth to your shareholders or to the people that have invested in your business. The dynamic is shifting so aggressively, is that if you don't do anything, then you stand to lose market share and you stand to lose your business in terms of going out of business if you don't address those needs.
But you, and you've used some language there about, you know, that implies bigger businesses, right? Big thing. But I'm the lover of the small business. I like the small guy. Most of the, particularly in my space, I talk about the IT services companies, of which 93% are less than 5 million in revenue. How do you guide someone in that space who doesn't have the big company resources, and who also might be making the thinking, well, you know, we're a small little company. Of course we're, you know, we don't have a ton of resources. And of course we're like, we reflect our community. We reflect the people we've hired. Like, how do you guide those organizations on this exploration?
Yeah, no, it's most businesses are small businesses. Let's just start there. I think more than 90%, close to 90% of all U.S. businesses. So, the thing is that it's actually easier because typically those small businesses are closer to the customer, as we like to say. And those people actually walk into the stores or walk into the places that those businesses exist, if they're not purely online only. It's actually not that much more difficult, meaning I know it sounds simple. It's just understanding your customer base that exists within your footprint. Especially if you are a small business, not at a top 10 cities, are already minority majority. Mm-hmm. The question is, if you have a footprint and you're looking at the people walking to your store and they're all white, then this huge plethora of 40% of the market at a minimum that you're not even capturing. So imagine if you can increase your business 20%, 30%, 40%. Let's start there in terms of what does the financial model look like. You not getting that share versus you actually getting that share. So that's a simple math equation, right? It's not rocket science. It's math. It's modeling. Wait a minute now. If I can increase my business another 20%, 30%, what does that look like? Well, that's number one, sizing the opportunity. And that's simple census information that exists in your city, your town, or state. Where are they at from a demographic standpoint? And then sometimes we'll get the rebuttal, well, you know, my product and service is for everybody. We don't see color. We see opportunities. Well, that's great too, but aren't people different in some ways? Not everybody's the same. Whether they're black, white, green, red, we only use the census information because that's a value that was placed on one of the largest databases in the world. So one could argue, like, why would you ignore that amount of data? So if you want to talk tech and modeling, like, wouldn't you want to start with one of the biggest sources? Just because you start there doesn't mean you're going to end there. So the first is modeling. In your state, in your city, your town, where do those opportunities exist from a targeting standpoint? That's number one. Number two, take a sample of those people that are demographically different of your product and service and ask him about, how am I doing? Do you like my product? For this, where do you go get your product? Who are some of the other places and spaces that you shop for this product? And again, that's a survey. That's a focus group. It's an investment, probably less than, you know, $8,000 to $10,000. And then you got a base. Well, here's my gaps. Here's what I'm not doing in terms of the overall experience. Here's where the channels that they actually shop. And are you simply doing is looking for those gaps. How do they receive communications? What are they looking for in terms of their wants and needs versus your base? Once you understand your base versus the other, then you've got a gap analysis, a simple gap analysis. And then the last thing, how do you get them in your footprint? Do they come in store? Do they shop online? Like, you're trying to address those gaps because at the end of the day, you're not getting those people into your stores or your retail or your service environment. And it starts with that financial model. And so you can ignore that and continue to make returns decent year over year until something happens. And then once that something happens, you're going to be scrambling to now all of a sudden say, oh my goodness, why didn't I do that?
So the other thing that that perked my curiosity and why I wanted to talk to you on this was, so this sounds really, you know, it sounds great, but you've actually put together a methodology and a way of measuring maturity of companies along their journey. Tell me a little bit about the way that, that you've put that together to help quantify this thing that feels very qualitative.
I think what's sometimes viewed as qualitative is it's you know, the belief of your value system. That's qualitative. That gets into how you were raised. What do you see in terms of ethics? What do you see in terms of truths? You know, there's facts and there's the one source of truth, and that's a fact. That's very qualitative, right?
Right.
We start with quantitative analysis in terms of understanding, here's what the opportunity is for the total addressable audience. Are you getting it or are you not? That's math. In most cases, we see companies are not getting it. So then it becomes, well, do I care? That's qualitative, right? That gets back to your mission, your values. And most companies will see the opportunity, but do they care about it? Let's just be honest. That's something totally different that we don't address. Now, what we started doing was thinking about this. Well, if companies need more rigor to the process of change, what is it that is missing? And so, you know, that's why we don't do DE&I. We don't do multicultural marketing. And part of it is that, you know, most of these organizations need change management practices, not integration practices. And so with change management, you have a maturity model. Think Six Sigma that measures quality. Think a digital transformation roadmap that has a maturity model as company goes from analog to digital. And so what was missing out of this conversation was a maturity model as it relates to culture. And so we went back and looked at, you know, social science, and within social science, you have a mono, multi, cross, poly, and trans culture. Those are five stages of culture. We develop an assessment tool that measures how culturally mature an organization is based on those principles as it relates to social science. And then we test and learn our way into, operationalizing that assessment tool offline, sample. And then in 2019, we developed an algorithm, and in that algorithm, it basically embedded in a piece of technology that allows for continuous improvement as it relates to culture and helping companies culturally transform from a monocultural organization to a cross and polycultural organization.
So my listeners should be, I hope, would be going, oh, this sounds like what we do in technology with operational maturity level models. You know, particularly in my space, service leadership has got a well-known one for the operations of managed services providers. It what perked my interest. So, and you've got a way of someone who can do walk themselves through some assessments on their own, right? And then engage with you?
Yes. So that's coming Q4, Q1 of next year. Because, okay, you know, people say, well, Jeffrey, who helped you do this? How'd you do it? Well, think about my background, you know, in terms of marketing, research, both quant and qual, a lot of the things that we brought over to the space, people use, you know, multiple times occasions in terms of marketing. We brought it over to the workplace side because we didn't see the rigor. And part of the reason for the workplace piece was because of the addressable data that we're able to capture people's attitudes and behaviors. So it was a necessary innovation. You know, I think for people that are familiar with the maturity model, I think it helps see people where they're at, because that's the fear we talked about earlier, Dave. It's one thing to say, hey, you need to get, you know, X percent of your women on the board and minorities. Well, that's great. But once you get them there, how do you keep them there? And how do you make them feel included and right, in an equitable partnership? Well, you got to change the people that are already there, that have been that source of truth, have been that source of power from an equity standpoint. And so we had to have that so that people knew where they were at, and then give them tools over the course of time that helps that organization become more culturally inclusive.
So, in a way, and I think I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds, I mean, this is digital transformation, just cultural transformation. It's the same methodology, right?
So that's why I was like, why is it so hard to understand when you've done it through quality? Now, digitalization, now you need to do it for your workplace, at least a cultural transformation.
And that was the aha moment in prepping for this, that when I thought about this, saying like, wait a second, if I think about it in that views, and if I use a maturity model, this can make a lot more sense. I don't want to belittle the perceived fear, because there is, it dealing with people is always harder. Dealing with people is always harder than dealing with, you know, for example, technology or process or something like that, but it's the same skill set. And that was it.
Yeah. It's the same skill set, but I'd say even, you know, more critically important you get it right. Because even though you're making those things, whether it be through code, you know, through quality in terms of products, you're making them for people. So Right. As the people have changed, this is only going to make what you've designed and made that much more exponentially better. And that's where we get excited, because, you know, it's a unfortunate failure as it relates to America and certain parts of the world. But for the first time in human history, minorities are becoming the majority, and already are the majority in some cases. So it's not something to continue to ignore. It's like, am I going to do it on my own, or am I going to be forced to do it? And forced meaning competitors are going to do it, and then you're going to be forced to respond to the market dynamics.
Right. And then, and that's my, ultimately, the, I mean, I keep looking at it from the same bit, is the market. I take market data. The market is changing. I must understand the demographics of the market. I must perform with it. Oh, and I've always been in the business of finding opportunity. And, you know, all of the data says you want to outperform by 20%, be a diverse organization. The data says that. So, learn this skill. I freely admit, for my own self, it's like, I don't know this. I've not spent my time thinking about this skill, but now I am, because of the data, but I have new data, and now it's time to go do that. So giving a sort of last guidance to people that are listening here, how do they get started? Like, what's the first thing they need to be inventorying or thinking about or prepping that they need to be ready? Like, if they were to call you up, like, what's the first set of questions that you're going to ask them to deliver?
We did this the old fashioned way. And what I mean by that, you know, we were not in a dorm room thinking about the problem that people were looking to solve for, and wrote a piece of code and just built it in real time. We kind of did it through forming a thesis. And in the formation of that thesis, we went out and got to convince people to test it, and then got people to pay us for it, and then eventually built a product that was scalable. So a little bit of old-fashioned way. So in the process of doing that, we developed some resources, thought leadership. And so we advocate, you know, you can buy the book, Reframe the Marketplace. You can use some of our free resources on the website, getreframed.io, and then have a conversation about the questions that you may or may not have as a result of that. And then if it's something that you want to go deeper, we are offering a summit, a change summit, and an accelerator at the back half of this year. And then should you want to move forward with your organization, and it can be 10 or less, then there's an opportunity to engage from there. But what we do advocate for is to first do your research on the topic, understand our thesis, and then see, you know, for some organizations that may have 50 employees to 500, then it's a question of, if you believe in the thesis, you've done the research, you have questions, then, you know, feel free to contact us at getreframed.io, and we'll help you from there.
Seems like a great place to give everyone something to do. There's some free resources in there, the book, or ways to engage. So really appreciate your time and chatting with me today.
Yeah. No, Dave, really appreciate the time. And if you have any questions, happy to jump back on as well.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.